Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
Welcome to Big Pop Fun, the podcast with your host, Tom Wilson, and guests from every corner of the, you know, places where Tom's been and asked to be on his show. Brought to you by Tom's Art at BigPopFun.com. Hey, support the arts by buying art. Big Pop Fun. Tom. Life. Showbiz. People. Here's Tom.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson podcast. I am Tom Wilson. You know, I'm trying to do the voice because I'm trying to match Jeff Harlan, the announcer of the podcast. But, man, my voice has been blown out, doing a lot of voiceovers, a lot of singing, a lot of just screaming at the top of my lungs off of some of the bluffs here in Southern California. That's how Richard Burton had said he got such a strong voice in England, speaking Shakespearean verse off of the cliffs of England at the top of his lungs. I don't know. I guess my voice is weaker than his because mine just kind of, it kind of gets blown out when I scream a lot and do that kind of voiceover. But wait, welcome back to Big Pop Fun, the podcast. I'm Tom. Yes, I should have been named Lightning Bolt Johnson Wilson, as people do now. I've just gone with Tom Wilson. Tom Wilkinson is a very prominent actor, and all he has is kin compared to me, and he's okay. So I don't know why people go like, Tom Wilson is awfully simple. Well, Wilkin, I don't know. John Smith, he was with Pocahontas in that really boring Disney movie. So, hey, I can have a simple name. Welcome back to another episode of Big Pop Fun. Thanks to Jeff Harlan, the announcer of the podcast. Thanks to you for thanks to you for dropping by. If you've heard the podcast before, welcome back. If you haven't, go in and now you have a treasure trove, don't you? A treasure trove of podcasts. How there are like 90 of them or something? Almost 90 hours of wonderful fun. As we all take a magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder and click our horses and, I mean, I don't know what you do to click horses, but, you know, you do that and the horses go off and we fly through the air with the greatest of ease. Though that's a circus song or something, but we fly through the air with the greatest of ease in our imaginations. And in our caring about each other, because imagination and caring is better than keeping our sleigh on the ground where it's all gravelly and we go and we just think about, you know, rent and bills and whatever, that tooth that's starting to hurt and all that stuff. No, let's fly through the air with the greatest of ease, heading to a brighter tomorrow with our imaginations, which will never fail us. Many things will fail us, but our imaginations will not. They can't take that from you. And it's always good to use. My kids, I was always the dad in the car saying, you're not bored? Well, there's no such thing as boredom. There's only a lack of imagination, which I truly believe to the marrow of my bones, unless you're on the shoot of an action movie on one of those days where they're kind of blowing up a building and a truck is running through it, because those days are so long and you're sitting in a director's chair that, trust me, you will. Yeah. No matter what your imagination is, you'll get bored eventually because you'll read every book in your bag. You could make flip books of the story of your life. And when you finish all of that, you say, how are we doing? And they go, we'll be ready in about 20 minutes. Which means, you know, a couple hours, go have another Dr. Pepper and chill out. But action movies are wonderful. Hey, if it wasn't for action movies right now, if it wasn't for scary movies where someone's coming to kill a young girl or robots are coming out of the ocean to kill us all, where would the movie business be? There would not be nothing to see. You know what's amazing? I told you when I was the awards guy, one of those nominating committees for the Screen Actors Guild, and how many DVDs you get and everything. And there are many wonderful movies. But the fact is they just never see the light of day, which is a shame. Which is a shame. There are two movies that I liked. I liked Quartet, and I liked A Late Quartet. I didn't even know, you know, maybe they made an early Quartet. I don't know. But there were two movies. Quartet, oh, I like that. A Late Quartet. I like that. I actually like that better, but I like them very much. But the fact is, you'd never see them in a movie theater, even in L.A. Sorry. I have to enunciate with my blown-out voice. Well, the brief commercial, the podcast is brought to you by art of all kinds. Let's support artists, dance, theater, music, painting, all sorts of, you know, even movie, independent movies, if you find them. Go and support artists because they are using their imagination and they're just exposing themselves. I mean, you know, personally, I mean, emotionally, and they're out there with their lives and their stories. And I hope you go out and support them no matter what they're doing in painting and in theater, in every kind of way. Of course, some of them are exposing, you know, really, really far too much. And that bespeaks more psychological issues than an actual art spirit. So, yeah. Why don't you, Ted, put on a loincloth, take five. Let's think about this. But it's brought to you by art. It's brought to you by, hey, my paintings, bigpopfun.com. Go and check it out. You know what's been very satisfying to me, very, very gratifying, is that, as I told you before on the podcast, I have sold a number of paintings recently off of the website, bigpopfun.com, because I've slashed the prices, because of closing galleries, because of the economy, because of many things. But the gratifying thing is, not to get the painting into people's hands, which is gratifying enough, but to get an email back from the people who now own the painting that's really that I care about, and they get it. The impasto work, the layered paint, the various colors within one brushstroke of color, the passion that clearly went into making that image. They look at it, and it's happened to me too in the paintings that are in my house. If you get a painting in your house that was painted with a great deal of passion, with a personal stake in it, and you put it up on the wall and you ponder it for a short period of time, you have to have it. You just, it becomes a part of you. It's a very interesting thing that many painters I know would absolutely say, listen, you don't have to buy the painting if you'd like to put it up on your wall for a while and see if you like it when it's up. Please feel free. And then if you don't care for it in a couple of months, just bring it back. No trouble at all. In 2 weeks, the people who have that art spirit in them, they look at the painting and it just sold. There's no way you could take that painting off that wall. It belongs on that wall. I have to have it. So that's a great thing. So thanks to the people who have bought paintings and who have shared those feelings with me, that they get it, that they're passionate about it, and they're enjoying it so much, and that means the world to me. Also, hey, pick up my book on iPad, Kindle, Nook, every e-reader platform, The Masked Man. Read it, enjoy it, tell a friend. Thank you. I have good news and bad news, folks. The good news is I am the toughest, strongest, toughest guy you've ever known in your life. But only pretend. And the bad news is that my son is actually bigger and stronger than me now, which happened a few days ago, which is bound to happen, which I knew would happen. And he's a very big guy, and he, you know, eats a lot of beef. And now he is big and strong, and we were wrestling about something or other, just kidding around, wrestling in that way the dad wrestles with Chip, and we were wrestling, and it was it was clear that I'm toast now, which is surprising to me. I'm a pretty big dude. I'm pretty strong. Okay, pretend I'm not a tough guy. I'm not a tough guy, but I've been very lucky. I've been very lucky in those kind of unusual occurrences in front of a lot of people that helped me out, that helped my rep, because I'm not tough at all. I'm the last. I mean, when I was in, I went to private school, Waldron Academy for Boys in Marion, Pennsylvania, outside Philadelphia. The first day of kindergarten, as I've told you, I guess in the podcast, I wore a suit and tie. A lot of Catholic schools wear polo shirts now, some slacks. No, I was in a suit and tie, black lace-up shoes, the whole thing, pocket square. Two handkerchiefs, in fact, one in my back pocket, one in the pocket square, one for show, one for blow. And I didn't play recess a lot. I had asthma. I didn't know what was wrong with me then, but I just knew that I couldn't run around. Everyone else would be running around. I would be trying to run around, and they would say I was very easily caught. I was the first guy that was it, because they would just catch me. You're it. I can't run. You know, come on, you're faking. Come on. No, I have to sit down. So I would sit down. And we're talking, you know, the first grade or whatever. I would spend my recesses, my play periods, like a 52-year-old accountant in Center City, Philadelphia. I would go outside, take off my jacket, you know, fold it nicely, put it against on a bench or something, and loosen my tie, and walk around, and look up at the trees, and ponder the leaves of the trees and the season we were in, and look at the clouds roll across the sky and watch a bunch of psychotic animals trying to damage each other, playing tag or various games. I wasn't tough at all, but I got lucky. They had a football team at the school. I guess you kind of had to do it. I mean, everyone else was playing football, so I played football, the little peewee football where you have the helmet that's just twice the size of your entire body. You have those little football pants, but the pads in the pants are so wide that you can't even run because the pads are hitting each other. I was on that kind of football team. And one of the early games, I didn't start or anything. I wasn't a big football player. I got in for the end of the game, maybe two plays. But I got lucky. I didn't even feel it. I didn't feel anything. Some kid's cleat, something or other, you know, cut my leg just a little bit. But it was down my leg, sort of near the sock. And it was bleeding. I didn't even know it. The end of the game, a couple of my teammates looked down. Wilson, you're bleeding. Bleeding, what? I looked out, and it didn't really, you know, stain the sock, that kind of thing, but just enough to, you know, wow. He bled all the way into his sock and everything. And I knew enough. I mean, I was very young, but I knew enough not to go for a Band-Aid right away, not to start whimpering, just to kind of play it cool, play it James Bond. Oh, yeah. Just a little scratch. I'll be all right. Yeah, I'll go in. I'll wash that off with some iodine or something. I'll have Dad pour some scotch on it later at my house. But no, I'm okay. You know, then they told the coach, hey, he's bleeding. Coach, are you all right? Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. Shake it off. But I got street cred at my school. He bled. He actually bled into his sock. Oh, no, nothing, fellas. Then I lived in Center City, well, not in Center City, but I lived in the Overbrook section of Philadelphia. I lived at 64th Street. It was a city. I was a city kid. But hey, look, the first bike I ever had, I got just stopped by a gang of kids who all stopped the bike. A kid grabbed the handlebars in front of me, probably surrounded by six kids, eight, bigger than me. They said, get off the bike. I said, it was a new, like Stingray with flames on the banana seat. He'd get off the bike. I said, what? No, it's my bike. You know, he punched me right in the face. And he punched me and they beat me up and knocked me off the bike and took it. But I actually took the punch. So I got some street cred with that, because I remember the kid punched me in the face and it, you know, it hurt. But as a bunch of kids were pushing me and punching me, the punch in the face, I remember thinking like, that didn't hurt as much as I thought it would. Like when the fist was coming toward my face, I thought, oh no. But it's okay. I mean, I got off the bike and everything. It worked. But at least I took a shot to the chops. And we played with the same kids that stole my bike eventually. You know, we ended up playing stickball or something. Not really stickball. We played half ball in Philadelphia. You had a pimple ball. It was like a tennis ball without the fuzz on it, like a naked tennis ball. But we called it a pimple ball. It had these bumps all over the ball, stars on the end of the ball. And it was a pimple ball. So you got a new pimple ball. With a new pimple ball, you could play wall ball, where you run up to the wall, hit the ball off the wall, and it goes into the air, and somebody either catches it or it lands on the ground, and you get single, double, triple home run, that kind of stuff. Or you could play step ball, which is the steps on the outside of your house, the row houses in Philadelphia. And you went and you knocked it into the step, and it went off the step, and it flew up into the air. Not as far. You could play step ball into the street. You could play wall ball in like a parking lot or a yard that you had more room. Step ball was for the street. Step ball, boom, goes into the street, and single, double, triple home run. And when the pimple ball got popped, which always happened, you cut it in half and played half ball, which is what we were playing. You got a broomstick, so it was stick ball, but it was with a half ball. Because you really couldn't play stick ball with a real pimple ball, because you'd send that thing flying three blocks with a pimple ball. So we were playing half ball in the alley behind my house. And the alley was a decrepit city alley. It had old Schaefer beer cans and huge oil slicks and broken glass and gravel and broken concrete, all that kind of stuff. And we're playing half ball with all these kids that thought I was, you know, not that tough at all and stole my bike. So I hit the half ball and I'm coming around. I go around second base. I hit the Schaefer can. I go into third. I slide on an oil slick heading home. Complete accident. My foot slips, but I land sort of in that perfect position that you would be in if you were a baseball player sliding into home. It's the position I took when I just fell. So I slip on the oil, slide into the concrete, slide across broken glass, across old aluminum pop tops, across the gravel, completely scrape up my leg, and I'm safe at home. And of course, everyone sees it and goes, "Wilson slid over broken glass. That's unbelievable." Hey, you know, I wasn't cut. I wasn't bleeding like the football thing, but I did have a lot of scrapes on my leg. And also, if you're going to be tough, don't cry in front of everyone. So I was there. But I kept it under control. Again, I was going with the legend. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm okay. Yeah, I meant to do that. Of course. Winnie, the throw's coming in. I got to slide, whatever. Broken glass? Yeah, right. I eat broken glass. Well, not now. I don't eat broken glass, but I could if I wanted to. So the legend increases. But then we moved. And I went down back to the bottom of the toughness totem pole again, because we moved house. So we moved out a little bit further into the suburbs. Went to a junior high out there. I was the lowest of the low. High school. You could, you know, as we've talked about on the podcast, you could figure out, look, I had asthma. I missed a lot of school. I was, I played the tuba, and the only trophy I got in my 4 years of high school was for the oral interpretation of prose, where I read from a piece called Babi Yar by the Russian poet Yevgeny Yevtushenko. And I'm not even kidding. So that's how tough I was. So, of course, I was, you know, pushed around a little bit, made fun of, and, well, you know, the whole, you know, the drill. And you've probably been there yourself if you're still hanging in there with me listening to this. Again, tough luck came my way. Because we were in the lunchroom, and one of the kids who had bothered me for years sneers at me. You know, "Wilson, you've whatever," you know, as if, loser. And I'm walking by him, and I just shrugged. He was like blocking my way a little bit, and I sort of shrugged. I didn't hit the guy. I didn't even push him. I sort of shrugged and like kind of, "Yeah, get up." And it just sort of forced him to move a little bit. but he kind of slipped against the chair that was next to him, and the chair kind of slipped into him, and he slipped more because the chair hit him, and then he grabs his lunch tray, and sort of that. So the chair goes down, lunch tray goes down, he goes down in order, you know, has to grab the table, this thing. I'm standing there. Everyone looks over because, I mean, fortunately, when I got back at the desk, and everyone looks over. I'm standing there. Kid, lunch tray, chair, all on the ground. Everyone. Wilson went psycho, threw a guy across a lunch table. Again, let the legend fertilize. So I just stood there, walked away, and for days, oh, you threw a kid over the lunch table. What is he's losing it, man? Were you psycho? Well, you know, that's the way things go. But it was all pretend. Then I went off to college and everything, but then I moved to New York. I went to college, but I didn't, there was no pretending you were tough there. And hey, studying acting in New York City. Look, if you're living in New York now, you already know this, but if anyone's visiting New York, don't, you know, luck of being tough, it's not going to happen there. And don't just fight the legend there. Do not pretend you're tough in New York. Just somebody else. It's a crowded city. So those 30 people who are around you, I believe six of them are way tougher than you and would just love to prove it, like right then. So don't pretend you're tough in New York. So I didn't. I just kind of tried to lay low, tried to be in plays, tried to learn my acting, tried to study, tried to memorize lines, tried to, you know, the early stand-up and everything. Then I moved to L.A., but I was big. I was big in L.A. I was big then, too, in New York. I was growing. I'd been growing. So in L.A., first job I get, bouncer. It was pretend. I was a bouncer. I pretended to be a tough guy. I was waiting for some luck to happen, something that would make me look tough. It really didn't. It really didn't. One time there was at the original room at the Comedy Store, I was sort of around a guy and I did not push him because guys would push guys down these stairs, but I didn't, but he sort of fell down a couple of stairs and it looked like I kind of, you know, squared off with him. I really didn't. One time in front of a lot of people, I sort of dragged a guy out who had hit a girl. That's the one thing, two different times when I was being a doorman, that's the one, yeah, that kind of set me off. Two times I've seen that, and that was not good. Other than that, you're tougher than me, you win, what, you know, you fine, I don't care, it's all pretend, I'm not a tough guy. But then, yeah, two different times. Working in nightclubs since I was 19 years old to now, you know, you see a lot of ugly things and you're able most of the time to ignore them, to roll your eyes about them, to say a quiet interior prayer for the poor soul whose life has ended up far, far from what they'd imagined in some dark corner of a parking lot of a nightclub. But two times when guys hit girls, I didn't like that at all. And yeah, then I kind of, yeah. I used the tough juice then. I used the size thing and just, yeah, because I was mad. Too much information. Sorry about that. Yeah, I won't do the whole thing, but I did drag some guys and like threw them far from me, convincing them very, very clearly not to come back toward me or anybody, you know, around the club or this parking lot or anything. They should go like right now. But the fact is, now my son is tougher than me. And I can't even use my mouth guard trick because back then when I was a bouncer, I bought a mouth guard. And if people weren't convinced or if they trying to make trouble with you, you could put in a mouth guard. And they think, wow, the guy bought a mouth guard. He must fight all the time, even though I didn't. But they think you do. So you're like, that's enough. All right, go home. And they're thinking, wow, okay, I will go home because of the mouth guard guy. But I can't buy a mouth guard to convince my son of everything because now he really knows because he's been around me for a very long time. So he knows the secret anyway, that I'm not tough, that I'm actually the Trojan librarian, that in this big body, there's actually a door in my chest. And if you open it, there's a small guy in a sweater vest and a plastic pencil holder who's just running knobs and things. And he's stronger than me and bigger than me. So I'm just looking for a stroke of luck that might happen at my own house where I kind of look tough. Because right now, the toughness ship is going down. But here's my little secret to the illusion of toughness. Don't let them see you cry. Don't just take it, take the shot, look at the blood something, and just say, I'm fine. And then there's always somewhere you can cry alone. Which is a new country song I'm writing. There's always somewhere you can cry alone. There's always somewhere you can cry alone. There's always somewhere he can find a home. If you're thinking about going it alone. I already used Alone twice to rhyme. Man, I'm a horrible country songwriter.
The Big Pop Fun Podcast. And Tom's been working like a dog. Actually, it's not really that much work. He just likes giving the impression that it's harder than it actually is. Perfect!
Speaking of the complete illusion of toughness, I wrote this song a while ago, played it in my act. It's on YouTube. It's on a YouTube video. I've been amazed at the response of guys, especially young guys, who want to mess with me. I don't know why they say, oh, tough guy, huh? You want to do... in their YouTube comments and their things after shows. Hey, it's just a joke. It's the illusion of toughness. Unless you want to mess with one of them. She's got long blonde hair running down her back and pretty blue eyes, yeah, that's a fact. Her nose is just perfect and her smile just gleams. She looks like a model in a magazine. She got her itty-bitty body and a teeny-tiny skirt. You can see her belly button neath her purple skimpy shirt. She's a California beauty who could stop the show. But there's one thing, fellas, that you got to know. She's my daughter. Yeah, that's right. She's my daughter. You touch her or hurt her, you make her sad. I'm gonna hurt you twice as bad. I don't mean emotionally. 'Cause I'm the kind of guy that likes to have some fun, just drinking lots of liquor and polishing my gun. You wanna mess around with my pussy cat? I might just kill you with a baseball bat. I own a crowbar, steak knives, I got a hatchet, man. But come on, let's face it, I could kill you with my bare hands. I catch you making moves on her, I'll know just what to do. I'll shove my foot so far up there, I could wear you as a shoe. She's my daughter. Yeah, that's right, she's my daughter. Ooh, I'll sneak into your room where mommy makes your bed. I'll grab that stupid surfer necklace and I'll beat your little head in, 'cause she's my daughter. Yeah, that's right, she's my daughter. Ooh, come on over for dinner and meet us friendly folk. Just remember, little fella, this song is not a joke. 'Cause I'm a steamroller, baby, gonna roll all over you. It's Tom's illusion of toughness. We'll be right back.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.